From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! As the presidency hangs in the balance, so does a man's life. Today, George W. Bush decides whether to execute Miguel Flores. He's scheduled to die at 6 p.m. Texas time. We'll speak with his grandfather outside of death row. Also, with the presidential elections based on a recount in Florida, state officials are preparing to announce the winner. Allegations surface about voting irregularities in Palm Beach County. We'll talk with Cornel West about the issue of the Ralph Nader vote. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Tonight, just 2 hours after Florida election officials are due to announce the results of the vote recount and declare the winner in the presidential elections, Texas is set to execute 31-year-old Miguel Flores, a Mexican citizen. Only the Supreme Court and Texas Governor George W. Bush now have the power to decide whether to spare his life. If Bush is declared the winner in the elections today, one of his first decisions as president-elect will be to execute yet another person in the state of Texas. Flores was convicted of murdering 20-year-old Angela Tyson, the small Texas panhandle town of Borger, and has been on death row for 11 years. The case has become a sticking point between Mexican and U.S. authorities because Flores was not notified of his consular rights when he was arrested, as required by the Vienna Convention, which the U.S. has signed and ratified. The State Department yesterday sent a letter to the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles urging its members to consider granting clemency to Flores because of this violation. The board denied, 18-0. Mexican authorities, Flores' lawyers, and his family say that had he been allowed to contact the consulate, he would have received help in finding a competent defense attorney. They say that Flores' court-appointed attorney did not contest the testimony of Dr. Clay Griffith, a psychiatrist who frequently testifies against defendants in death penalty trials. Although Griffith had never met or examined Flores, he predicted he would commit violent acts in the future, a factor that allows juries to vote for death. And his family is particularly upset that they were never called to testify at the trial by the defense attorney, who presented no mitigating evidence in the sentencing phase. Had they been allowed to talk to the jury about their son, who had no prior criminal record, they believe that they would have convinced its members to vote for life in prison instead of death. In a recent film called The Back of the World, Tomas Rangel, grandfather of Miguel Flores, said that he hoped to be dead before his grandson was executed because he could not bear the thought of having to go through so much suffering. Well, he joins us today from Livingston, Texas. Tomas Rangel, welcome to Democracy Now! Tomas Rangel, welcome. Well, we will go to him in just a minute. And in the meantime, we will read a few of the other headlines. Democrat Al Gore cut into Republican George W. Bush's lead today in a recount of 6 million presidential ballots in Florida as claims mounted of voting irregularities in the decisive state. With ballots from 21 out of 67 Florida counties recounted, Texas Governor Bush had 1,278 more votes than Vice President Gore, this according to CNN's website. Gore picked up 642 votes, while Bush gained 144 votes. The new count in Florida is expected to be released at 5 p.m. today and may give either side the state's crucial 25 electoral votes. Both sides need to win Florida's electoral votes to clinch the 270 needed to win the White House. However, the absentee ballots could take longer to count, and they may be needed to determine the outcome of the excruciatingly tight race. This news from Oregon. Voters narrowly rejected a proposal to ban Oregon educators from providing instruction that initiative sponsors claim encourages gay behavior. Jim Anderson, A spokesperson for the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network said this is an incredible victory for gay youth. Oregon voters have sent a message that you can't choose which students are legitimate and which students are not. Measure 9 would have prevented Oregon public schools from giving lessons that would encourage, promote, or sanction homosexuality. Schools found in violation could have lost state financing. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says it's no way to run a country. The Democratic lawmaker is co-sponsoring a proposed constitutional amendment to get rid of the Electoral College. In the Electoral College, each state is given one vote for each member of its congressional delegation. Durbin is among those who say the system of state-based electors conflicts with the principle of one person, one vote. We now go back down to Livingston, Texas, where Tomas Rangel is standing by as he awaits the execution of his son, his grandson, Miguel Flores. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning. This is my name, Tomas Rangel, and I wanted to talk the whole people who can listen to me. I have a son, my grandson. He's going to be executed in Texas today. And my daughter, his mother, and me, we are asking for everybody to do something for us, because we are really with a heart pain for because we cannot support this thing. Now my wife is a little sick, and my daughter is in bed right now, and I feel alone. And I ask everybody, call to Mr. Bush, the Texas governor, and next president of the U.S., the United States, maybe today, and I want to everybody, you can listen to me this morning, understand me and my family. It's something real terrible. They waited for a long, long time, 11 years exactly. And today, yesterday, my son going to be executed. And I can explain how the whole family feel, because I don't think so. Nobody can explain that. Only the person that be in the same place we are, because when the mother's expecting something like that happened with your son. He died 3 or 4 times first. I'm sorry that I cannot talk to very clear what I want to say. I don't have a word to explain what my family feel, but if you can do something for us, not only for my son, but for every people, they have two son, brother, father, friends in jail.
Tomas.
Waiting for, yes?
Rangel, I understand the Swedish ambassador to the United States, the French ambassador, the Polish ambassador, the U.S. State Department has also weighed in. The arguments in the last hours being the Mexican government, of course, as well, that your grandson, Miguel Flores, was not notified of his consular rights as required by the Vienna Convention that the U.S. has signed and ratified. Is there a chance that George W. Bush could weigh in today, even after the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles, as usual, has ruled against your grandson in these last hours?
Well, the rule of parole they denied yesterday, yeah, I understand the Supreme Court also. Their only hope is Mr. Bush. That's because I want to give us a phone number if somebody want to call him and asking for help to us, for the family. I really don't want to nobody feel less pain like my whole family feel. We are a big, big family. But I ask for everybody to do something better, to help us. We got friends around the Texas state and the other part to the U.S. And they are have protest and they want to stop the death capital in Texas. And not only for Miguel Flores, but if my son died today, I ask in the same way, in the same thing to all people, to try and help us. There's going to be no more execution.
Tomas Rangel, your family was not allowed to testify in the trial. What would you have told the jury if you had a chance to address them?
Well, I already comment with close friends and the family. If they give another trial, if this trial going to be 50-50, I mean, with a good chance that my son be defended for a good lawyer, if the grand jury find my son guilt again and they want execution, I think it's going to be more understandable. Because right now, that only I can say that my son's favor is they ignored us, my whole family and their friends, and I don't think so. This is good justice. And that's because we are not happy about this justice, because we need it for everybody, for every man who are right now in some court or anywhere else, maybe in the whole world. I just want to do a fair defense, because this is the country where I live, where I have my family, and where I'm going to die. But I want to see for one time the people with the trust again, the U.S. governor, the Supreme Court judge, and the state a court judge, because we need to feel a strong even in the dead. Because we know the law is law. And I don't think so. There's nothing wrong with the U.S. law.
Yes.
It's perfectly clear. It's pretty strong. And we need to have representatives, I mean, the lawyers.
Tomas Rangel, you have the phone number of Governor George W. Bush?
Yes, I have, and I'm going to give it to you. And it's 512-463-2000. And the fax is also 512-463-1849. And I'll give you thank you for letting me this moment to talk to the people. And I know that I'm going to be better. I'm going to feel a little more strong, because really, right now, I will need my all power. And thank you, everybody. And
well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Tomas Rangel. Again, Mr. Rangel's grandson, Miguel Flores, is scheduled to die at 6 p.m. Texas time today at the Huntsville prison. George W. Bush will be weighing the fate of Miguel Flores as the nation weighs George W. Bush's fate today. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! George W. Bush's phone number in Austin, the governor's number, is 512-463-2000. That's 512-463-2000.
It all began when they took me from my home and put me on death row, a crime for which I'm totally innocent, you know. I began to warm and chill to objects and their fields, a ragged cup, a twisted mop, the face of Jesus in my soup, those sinister dinner deals, the meal trolley's wicked wheels, a hook bone rising from my food, and all things either good or ungood. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning, and in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this weighing of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. I hear stories from the chamber. Christ was born into a manger, and like some ragged stranger, he died upon the cross. Might I say it seems so fitting, in its way he was a carpenter by trade, or at least that's what I'm told. My kill hand's tattooed evil across its brother's fist. That filthy five, they did nothing to challenge or resist. In heaven his throne is made of gold, the ark of his testament is stowed, a throne from which I'm told all history does unfold. It's made of wood and wire, and my body is on fire, and God is never far away. Into the mercy seat I climb. My head is shaved, my head is wired, and like a moth that tries to enter the bright eye, I go shuffling out of life just to hide in death a while. And anyway, I never lie. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, Johnny Cash singing Mercy Seat about the electric chair. When we come back from our break, we're going to Florida. We're going to be talking about the recount and the history of voter fraud in Florida. We'll also be speaking with women in Palm Beach County who got confused by the punch card they were handed and now are concerned that their votes could be determining, or their mistaken votes could be determining the next president of the United States. Stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. This afternoon at around 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Florida election officials may be announcing whether Vice President Al Gore or Governor George W. Bush has won the 65 electoral college votes of the state of Florida. The winner will become the next president of the United States. Before the recount, Bush led Gore by a margin of just 1,700 votes, the size of a mere high school. But even if Bush gets Florida's 25 electoral votes, Democrats suggest they may pursue complaints about voting irregularities. Some Democrats in Palm Beach called for a new election in the county, saying the punch card ballot was so confusing that people mistakenly voted for Patrick Buchanan, the Reform Party candidate, instead of Gore. The county is heavily Democrat, but somehow ended up giving Buchanan more than 3,700 votes, nearly 2,700 more than Buchanan received in Florida's 66 other counties. Voter fraud is not new to Florida. We turn to Francisco Arruca, host of Radio Progreso in Miami, to talk about what's now happening in the state and about last year's mayoral race in Dade County and what happened on the issue of voter fraud. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Francisco. Francisco. Let's turn to Howard Simon, executive director of the ACLU in Florida. The ACLU has received numerous complaints from voters since the elections. Howard Simon, can you lay out for us what has happened?
Well, I want to say I don't think when we're talking about Palm Beach, this is a situation of fraud. There has been a history and some recent unfortunate history of voter fraud in Miami-Dade County. I mean, the last mayoral election, for example, was thrown out because the absentee ballots were rife with fraud of the ballots of people who had been deceased and so on. And in fact, the apparent winner in the mayoral election was thrown out by the court, and the incumbent was reinstated based on fraudulent ballots. But that's not what we're talking about in Palm Beach County. What we're talking about in Palm Beach County is the frustration of the will of the voters and the disenfranchising of voters because the ballot was unclear. It was a unique ballot in the state, in which candidates were placed side by side. And for example, in order to vote for the candidate who was in the second row on the left side of the page, you had to punch the third hole. And it obviously confused lots of voters. 19,000 ballots were disqualified by people who punched one hole, realized they made a mistake, and instead of asking for a new ballot, punched a second hole, which of course would mean that their ballot would be disqualified. In addition to that, 3,700 votes were cast for the person who had the second hole to punch, namely Pat Buchanan, which is clearly an anomaly. In the adjoining county, which is a larger in population, considerably larger in population, Broward County, Buchanan got 769 votes. Clearly, a lot of people were confused as to whether to punch hole two or punch hole three, which means that the entire election in that county, the entire election in the state of Florida and the results of the United States presidential election looks like it hinges on the fact that the ballot in Palm Beach County confused the voters.
Howard Simon, we're also joined on the phone by Francisco Ruca of Radio Progreso in Miami. Give us a little history on voter fraud in Florida, Francisco Ruca.
Well, the history here is not good at all. It's becoming now more important since one of the irregularities that is being paid attention to here is precisely the absentee ballots. Your listeners should realize that although Dade County has a majority of Cuban voters, Gore won Dade County. And that is because the blacks, white Americans, and non-Cuban Hispanics voted for Gore in such a high percentage that they overcame the vote of the Cuban Americans. However, even though Gore won Dade County, it ended up losing in the absentee ballots by more than 7,000. That is attracting a lot of attention now that we're all under the microscope because of the importance of this issue. And people, of course, realize that there is ample proof that there exists an organized machinery in Dade County that consciously has been using absentee ballots for fraud. In 1997, already an investigation took place that landed several people in jail, because even some dead persons ended up voting, by the way, that was discovered during the investigation. Several people landed in jail, including a commissioner. And a judge finally had to throw out the election for mayor of Miami in 1998 and actually cost the election to the one that supposedly had won it, Mayor Suarez, precisely because fraud in absentee ballots. So the fact that Gore won Dade County and now loses the absentee ballots by 7,000, of course, is being taken very much into account. What will happen after that, we don't know, because there are still very serious doubts as to whether these irregularities will lead to a deeper investigation. We don't even know that. But, of course, a lot of attention is being paid to that issue. There is no doubt that the behavior of absentee ballots, given our past history, is something that should have people concerned.
We're going to go now to two women who did cast ballots yesterday, two women who live in Palm Beach County. Professor Barbara Sheffer is with us, Professor of Civics and Government at Broward County Community College. What happened yesterday?
First of all, I'm in Palm Beach County, Palm Beach Community College. But aside from that, what occurred in relation to the voting process is I was actually told before I went into the booth that there may be some difficulty with the arrangement of the presidential candidates on the pages. And glanced down, looked at it, and with some fairly mighty effort managed, I think, but that's the operative word, I'm pretty unclear as to whether or not I actually voted for my choice of candidate. And the net effect is that a lot of people are looking at this on television screens. We're seeing it from the standpoint of a flat image off of a Xerox machine. In fact, the presentation ahead of time in newspapers and so forth of that particular document was, again, on a flat surface. When you look at it three-dimensionally, standing at, you know, at basically waist level, the entire perspective of the ballot takes on a completely different appearance. I teach at the community college. I have had students come to me repeatedly throughout the last 2 days stating that they, too, had doubts, but they walked away. And one of the things that was also a general misunderstanding, including for myself, by the way, is that once I began voting, I felt like I could not walk away from that ballot and request a second one. To me, that was discomforting. I obviously didn't make the inquiry. A lot of other people did not, too. I had one student that's in my class who's a nurse, who's a registered nurse, who's come back to the community college to get some further education, who said to me she knows she punched twice because she tried to figure out a way to cancel the fact that she had done it, cast her ballot for Buchanan. So she's one of those 19,000 that Mr. Simon is talking about that really ended up with a double punch that has been disqualified. Generally speaking, I think the thing needs to be redone. I certainly am willing, and I expect that I may end up participating in litigation that will turn into a request for a revote for those persons who did vote that day, at least for the presidential election. There are other, as Howard said, anomalies that exist up in this county. Pages were missing. In some instances, there were triple pages for presidents. The best way to characterize the ballot is it was kind of messy. and very deceptive.
Elaine Kligman, you're a resident of Palm Beach. Yes. What happened with you yesterday?
Well, just what this lady said. In fact, when we got the sample ballot, it looked completely different. Firstly, it was twice the size. Then it was in white with blue, and there were no punch holes in it. So that when we walked into the vote, it was completely different and very confusing. And believe me, none of us would have voted for Pat Buchanan, who was just on the Today Show and said, these people would never have voted for me. He just said it himself. So it is true that something was very wrong here and very confusing.
Well, actually, James Baker, who the former Secretary of State, who was just dispatched by Bush to oversee the Republican monitoring team in Florida, told the Today Show that Palm Beach County voters' rights were upheld. He said they did have a chance to have their voices heard. And let me tell you something else about that ballot. That ballot was posted as required by Florida law in newspapers and public places all over the state of Florida. Not one complaint was received about that ballot, which, by the way, was approved by a Democrat who was elected.
We all know that. But as the lady before me said, it was a completely different look when you walked in there.
The three-dimensional look, Amy, makes a whole world of difference. And by the way, I'm enjoying the fact that the Republicans are yelling and screaming about this because I'm a registered Republican. The bottom line is, in a three-dimensional appearance, I would defy the majority of voters in this country to be able to figure out who they'd be voting for in relation to a series of arrows where holes appeared to be, you know, two tandem holes appeared to be next to the same names. And in addition to that, lines that cut across at certain points where you did the punch hole. Lots of people in this country, I'm sure, are used to using voter machines. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a punch card. And again, I'm sure there's other voters in this country that use that type of thing, too. The strip for the holes went down the middle between the names instead of to the right as required by state law. There's a whole lot of things that are being brought into question. It's a question, too, in terms of who appeared in what order. As I understand it, under Florida state law, we're supposed to have the order as follows. Whoever gets the largest amount of vote in the primary goes first, second, et cetera, in a nice orderly fashion. Well, that wasn't the case here. Mr. Gore was not second, and indeed should have been. So it goes way beyond the reach of meeting the requirements as far as pre-announcements or pre-publications.
I just want to understand something. You have a lawsuit in Florida County, Palm Beach County, where more than 19,000 ballots have been disqualified. Howard Simon, how were they disqualified?
Well, they were disqualified by the fact that people realized they made a mistake. And when you realize you make a mistake, what you have to do, and I acknowledge it takes some courage to do so, you have to say that your ballot is spoiled and you have to request another ballot. But instead of doing that, people mistakenly simply punched another hole. Well, you can't punch two holes in an election in any election. If you vote for two candidates in an election, your ballot is going to be canceled. So that's why 19,000 ballots were disqualified, because people had voted for more than one candidate. But I want to say something about this. It is true that this ballot in Palm Beach County was developed by a Democratic county clerk. It is true, I think, that the system is that when the clerk develops the ballot, she has to submit it to the two parties, and the two parties approve the ballot, and that's how it got, and that's how it got on the ballot. But, you know, the political parties have their own interests involved in this thing. But the concern that we have and the litigation that we are considering now and the discussions that we have with people is a discussion on behalf of the rights of the voters. The voters have a right to a clear ballot so that they can translate their intent into and implement their intent in an election, regardless of whatever the political parties approve or whatever the political parties may think is a clear ballot. In this particular case, the political parties may have approved a ballot that clearly, and I think the figures now after the election show it, has frustrated the will of the voters and clearly confused lots of voters. 19,000 disqualified ballots are all out of proportion to the number of disqualified it's many more disqualified ballots than in Miami-Dade County, which is far more populous. I think Miami-Dade County had 10,000 disqualified voters, and here in a nearby county, much smaller in population, has 19 disqualified voters. And people who did not punch
19,000?
19,000, right. So, you know, the parties and the clerk may have approved something, but what they approved disenfranchised voters from the most fundamental right that an American citizen can have, and that is the ability to participate in an election because the voters were given a ballot that a lot of people did not understand and was not and is not clear to many
people. This is the only ballot like this in the state of Florida, is that right?
The only county that you... In every other county, the candidates are all listed on one column and with the holes to punch in the middle. Or in some counties, where I live in Miami-Dade County, all the candidates are listed along the left side, and the same candidates in Spanish are listed along the right side of the page with the holes in the middle. Palm Beach is the only county in the state in which candidates were listed both on the left and on the right. And as I said, most importantly, if you wanted to vote for the candidate in the second row, you had to punch the third hole.
Hmm. Howard and Simon, how many complaints have you gotten at the American Civil Liberties Union in Florida?
Oh, I would say more or less between the complaints that have come directly to us and directly to our lawyers and their offices, I would say more than 100.
Randolph Scott McLaughlin also joins us, director of the Social Justice Center at Pace Law School in New York. Mr. Scott McLaughlin, your group yesterday filed a formal request with Attorney General Janet Reno asking for a formal investigation by the Justice Department. Why?
Well, we think that there are serious allegations here of irregularities, and we learned this morning that, as we've been told, 19,000 voters were disqualified. In Palm Beach County, not only is there a substantial Jewish population there, there's also a sizable African-American population. And under the Voting Rights Act, the Attorney General is empowered to ensure and protect the rights of African-American and other language minority voters. And we believe that if 19,000 people had their votes disqualified, their ballots, certainly something is wrong in Palm Beach County that deserves and warrants an investigation by the Attorney General. But let me just say this. Not only is the Attorney General empowered to operate under the Voting Rights Act, but lawyers and civil rights groups are also empowered to go straight to federal court to stop this election from going forward. And we are today reaching out to various civil rights groups across the country to call on all of us to join in an effort to make sure that the electoral process is free and fair and free from discrimination. See, we want to pull this out of the hands of the traditional, you know, party officials, the Democrats and the Republicans, because this is not really about them. This is really about the voters and not just the minority voters, but as the gentleman from the ASOU said, it's about the integrity of this process. And if a candidate is elected under this cloud, he or she, he will not be able to govern with the will of the people behind them.
Now, I understand the Attorney General, at least at this point, is saying that she will leave it to Florida to the recount and to do their own investigation.
Well, the problem with that is, and I'm waiting to hear her tell me that, because the problem with that is this is not just about recounting ballots. If 19,000 ballots were declared invalid, and we have to ask how many of those ballots were in predominantly African-American districts, that raises the specter of a Voting Rights Act violation. Now, let's be straightforward. I mean, I understand Ms. Reno's backing up at this point. That's understandable. She's letting the state officials do their thing first. But once these requests have been made, and they've been made by my organization, by the NAACP and other groups, you know, once that Florida process has come to an end, which may be by the end of the day, she has to have an investigation or at least an oversight of that. And if she won't, then there are other avenues that voters can take in Florida.
It is interesting to look at the vote for Buchanan. I understand in Palm Beach County, it's something like three times the state average. And yet Palm Beach County, well, how would you describe it in terms of its political persuasions? Let's put that question to Palm Beach community, Palm Beach County Community College Professor Barbara Sheffer.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
The question of support for Buchanan in your area.
I think basically from the understanding that Palm Beach County has historically, of all the counties in Florida, been extremely strong in Democratic support, that when I look at the results and the total and tallies throughout the state, it's a complete aberration. And I think, again, it's been mentioned earlier that Mr. Buchanan himself, Canada Buchanan, acknowledged that, which is rather telling as far as what he might have expected to receive from this county, an absolute total aberration.
Randolph Scott McLaughlin, do you think there could be a re-vote in Palm Beach County? Is that at all possible?
I think this is a highly unusual situation, though the parties are saying, we're not in a constitutional crisis. We surely are. Because here's the question. If it's true that there were irregularities and maybe even deliberate misconduct, we don't know that yet, in this county, what's the remedy? How do you fix the problem? Well, one way is to declare that Palm Beach voters, their votes are completely invalid. We're not going to do anything about it at all. That stinks. So what's the other option? To rerun the election in Palm Beach County. Where there are irregularities proven. Because, see, normally when you have irregularities in an election contest, the races aren't that close. So the irregularities, let's say there were, won't make a difference in terms of whether or not X candidate should be elected or Y. But here, you've got 19,000 people. And the vote differential now, I'm told, last count, was 900 votes. Certainly, if something had been done properly in Palm Beach County, we wouldn't have had that many voters confused and maybe even misled. So, the remedy would be to have that rerun. Now, what if we declare that Florida's votes, all the votes in Florida, because of the cloud in Palm Beach County, cannot be counted? Well, then we throw the election into the House of Representatives, which is not a good thing, given the state, given the way that house is controlled by one party. So I think the only realistic, fair option is to rerun that presidential election in Palm Beach County, and let's see how the vote comes out this time.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you all for being with us. Randolph Scott McLaughlin with the Social Justice Center at Pace Law School in New York. Howard Simon, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union in Florida. By the way, if people want to get in touch with you, Mr. Simon, where do they call?
305-576-2336 or 2337.
That's 305-576-2336, the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, as well as Professor Barbara Sheffer of Palm Beach County Community College and Elaine Kligman, a Palm Beach senior citizen, concerned about how the vote was done in her community. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, we're going to talk about a number of issues, including the Nader factor in this election, and also the very serious and sudden concern about voter fraud and people being stopped from voting, a concern particularly in the South that has been raised in the African-American community for many years. We'll be joined by Professor Cornel West. Stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman, and we do just have word that Attorney General Janet Reno is saying she will review a request for an investigation into allegations of voting irregularities in the presidential election in Florida, responding to a request from the NAACP for a Justice Department investigation into what the nation's largest civil rights organization is describing as numerous election irregularities. Well, there's been a lot of reviewing about what went on over the last few days and about the historic confusion that is taking place right now. And among the issues that are being discussed is the effect of the Ralph Nader candidacy, the Green Party, particularly in three states and what it has meant for Gore. We know what the New York Times attitude has been toward Ralph Nader. They've called him a narcissistic egotist. They have said that he was the spoiler and have almost waged a campaign against him. In the paper today, James Dow, not in the editorial pages where that's been going on, though I think that's influenced the news writing, writes, "Liberal Democrats are angrily threatening retribution against Ralph Nader and his Green Party allies if Vice President Al Gore is declared the loser in the too-close-to-call presidential election. Nader won just 3% of the nationwide vote, but his totals in the closely contested states of Florida, Oregon, and New Hampshire were well above the margins there between Gore and Bush. Pre-election polling around the country had found that if Nader were not in the race, perhaps half his supporters would back Gore. Others said they didn't know what they would do in the event of a Naderless race, though some said they would vote for Bush." Well, we're joined right now by Cornel West. I last saw him in Oakland at a Nader super rally as he was urging people to go to the polls and vote green. Professor Cornel West is a professor of African American Studies at Harvard University and has written many books. His latest one is with Henry Louis Gates, and it's called The African American Century, How Black Americans Have Shaped Our Country. Professor West, the Alphonse Fletcher Jr. University Professor at Harvard University. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Well, so very, very kind of you to have me, Amy. And I do want to say that there's thousands of us who deeply appreciate the quality of your contribution to the democratic discourse in this nation, and there's thousands of us who stand with you in whatever situation, context you find yourself. You have been indispensable and quite valuable to our struggle.
Well, thank you very much. The situation I may find myself in right now, actually, is yesterday the White House called after my interview with President Clinton and said, had all sorts of veiled threats about that conversation, and we'll see what happens. I asked if they're blacklisting me from the White House, and after heated argument, they seem to be stepping back from that. But it is a very serious issue when you get to interview the President of the United States to be then threatened by the most powerful center in the world is a serious issue.
It's very serious, but at the same time, it's a compliment because there's so few people who have the courage to present an alternative vision as you do. And Democracy Now! Is one of the few spaces in our culture where you get this kind of truth-telling. And at the same time, you mentioned Brother Ralph Nader, you're seeing the same thing. You know, it's ridiculous, pathetic, this kind of scapegoating among Democrats. You have Al Gore that can't win his own state, and Nader gets 1% of the 1% of the vote in Tennessee. He can't even win Arkansas, Clinton's own state. Nader gets 1%, but they don't talk about that. No, they won't scapegoat him on other issues, Oregon, Florida. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. Liberalism is in deep decay. And the democracy was in decay before the election in terms of the corporate-driven party politics and the limited choices that people make. And, of course, the vast majority of Americans who can vote still didn't vote. That's another sign of the decline and decay. So this kind of scapegoating among frightened liberals is just a sign of the disrepair of liberalism as a whole.
Well, let's look at Florida. You have Bush, at least at this point, around 2,900 votes, 2,909, 2,909,000, Gore at 2,907,000, and some. They're all around, they're about 49% each. And then you have Nader almost at 100,000. That would certainly make the difference.
Which means if Gore had spoke to the issues, I mean, commercial airport, why didn't he speak against it? That's, Nader did. Why didn't he speak to the situation of more of the working people there? I mean, Gore wants to fake left, go right, and still win. Well, you can't do that. You have to speak your mind and see what people see the direction that people go. I mean, so that this notion of somehow Gore has some ipso facto entitlement to votes is the most anti-democratic notion I could think of. But it's a typical move of scapegoating the most vulnerable rather than confronting the most powerful. And the most powerful in this case happened to be Gore and his lieutenants. And they did not run the kind of race such that we find ourselves in this situation.
What about this issue of voter fraud or voter irregularities that we're now hearing focused on really for the first time in Florida in a major mainstream way?
Well, I mean, one, I think we have to close ranks on that in that regard, and that's where I would be with Jesse Jackson and others. But at the same time, I mean, you got voter irregularities going on across the nation, especially in black and poor, black and brown poor communities. This is not the first time this surfaces. I think we get attention focus in this way going owing to the fact that Florida now is going to tip it one way or the other. But this kind of thing, of course, is, I think, much more systemic. It's just that it doesn't surface, and it only surfaces in certain contexts. But as I said before, I mean, then decay before the election. And the election is just another example of just how narrow the corporate party politics actually is in America.
We're talking to Harvard University professor Cornel West, his latest book, The African American Century, How Black Americans Have Shaped Our Country. What about African American participation in this election?
Well, I mean, one, it's been quite extraordinary. You got 90% of black people supporting Gore, only 8% supporting Bush. It was a sign of the mainstream black leadership galvanizing and mobilizing black people to vote for Gore. I'm very critical of that black leadership. I think it's too narrow, it's much too myopic, much too short-sighted. Gore pro-death penalty, pro-military. No word about the criminal justice system, no focus on the prison system, no talk about the wealth inequality that's growing, that's escalating. It's a, you get a black voting participation following the entrenched black leadership. And for the most part, I think that black community has really not received what it ought from the Democratic Party, and especially Gore leadership.
Where is the leadership?
Right now, they're in the hip pocket of Gore. The black professionals, the black politicians are tied to a patronage system, a Democratic Party. And when you look at look at it this way, that Gore could not mention poor people, but 42% of black children are poor. Black leadership is supposed to speak to the situation of black folk, and yet you have a candidate that can't even mention the condition of 42% of our children. And that's true, of course, for brown children, red children, and 21% of all American children across color. So, I mean, I think we've got some real debating to do in terms of the relation of black leadership in the Gore campaign.
Yesterday, I got a chance to ask President Clinton about why he hasn't issued an executive profile, an executive order against racial profiling. I know Gore has said that if he were president, it would be one of his first acts, but they've been in power for 8 years.
But it's ridiculous. If it wasn't for the Bill Bradley campaign, Gore wouldn't say that. If it wasn't for the Bill Bradley campaign, Clinton wouldn't say that. And, of course, if it wasn't for Al Sharpton and a whole host of other activists, you wouldn't even have racial profiling as a major issue in national discourse. So, I mean, here you got Bill Clinton that claims to have this special intimate relation to the black community and hasn't issued an executive order that has to do with banning racial profiling, the most basic right, which is arbitrary use of power, police power against black people. It's another sign, I think, of just how marginal the interest of the black community actually is when it comes to working poor and poor people. For black professionals and black middle class, the Clinton administration has been wonderful. For the black poor and black working class, devastating. That's part of the crisis of black leadership right there.
You begin your book, The African American Century, How Black Americans Have Shaped Our Country, with W.E.B. Du Bois.
The great Du Bois.
What would he say about today?
Well, Du Bois would say just what I expected. If you don't have third political force or third political party that's critical of the corporate-driven electoral system, then you're going to end up on the tail end, or you're going to end up holding your breath, hoping that a Gore wins. But when Gore wins, he still will, in the end, betray working people and poor people. Bush is worse. Gore, still dangerous.
Let's hear what President Clinton had to say in the interview with him about why people should vote. I'd like to get your comment, Cornel West.
Mr. President, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
You're calling radio stations to tell people to get out and vote. What do you say to people who feel that the two parties are bought by corporations and that they are, at this point, feel that their vote doesn't make a difference?
That there's not a shred of evidence to support that. That's what I would say. It's true that both parties have wealthy supporters, but let me just give you the differences. Let's look at economic policy. First of all, if you look at the last 8 years, look where America was 8 years ago and look where it is today. We have the strongest economy in history, and for the first time in 30 years, the incomes of average people and lower-income working people have gone up 15% after inflation, the lowest minority unemployment ever recorded, the highest minority home ownership, the highest minority business ownership in history. That's our record. If you look at our proposals, what do we propose to do? We propose a tax cut that helps average people for child care, for long-term care, for paying for college tuition, for retirement savings. We propose to invest large amounts of money in education, health care, the environment, in our future.
President Clinton addressing the issue of do we really make a difference when you've got the level of corporate control you do of parties.
And, of course, he missed the point. He missed the point. He doesn't recognize the way in which corporate power set the framework in which he answers the question. He says nothing about the fact that 1% of the population, when he entered office, owned 36% of the wealth, and 1% of the population now owned 48% of the wealth. He says nothing about the fact that income among those who make more than $200,000 increased 89%, but among working people, it's increased less than 14%. Those are the issues that need to be highlighted. But he can't conceive of thinking of wealth inequality. He can't conceive of the expansion of corporate power. Nothing about escalating oligopolies, monopolies. Nothing about the difficulty of local radio stations to stay on air owing to the colonization of corporate mergers in telecommunications. Nothing about the collapse of commercial investment banking and why millions of poor people can't even have a checking account and have to go to a check account enterprise. That's not on his radar screen. You know, it's like talking about Eskimos in Jamaica. It doesn't register because his framework is so truncated. And so thank God someone like yourself, Sister Amy, can raise that question because he's never thought about it. He's never had to think about it because the radical Democrats don't get a chance to ask president questions like that.
Whether he makes it or not to be president, your last 15-second comment for Al Gore and this 2000 election.
Well, I wish him well. Wish him well. We shall see what happens. But as I've said before, you know, Bush is very dangerous and Gore is dangerous. And the worst thing that could happen is Gore win and think somehow working people and poor people and black people ought to celebrate. And if Bush wins, it's simply we need to organize and mobilize much more effectively. And if liberals are going to trash Ralph Nader, then we recognize that liberals in the end are going to tilt in the right-wing direction rather than the left-wing anyway.
Professor Cornel West, his latest book, The African-American Century, How Black Americans Have Shaped Our Country. He wrote it with Henry Louis Gates, Professor Cornel West of Harvard University. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion. Our technical director is Errol Maitland. Matthew Finch is our engineer. If you'd like to order a cassette copy, call 1-800-735-0230. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
November 2nd, 2000, and we're so glad you could join us on this beautiful, beautiful Thursday morning in Southern California. Hi, I'm John Beaupre, and we think we got a great, fast-moving show for you. First off, U.S. Representative Javier Becerra will join us, and the topic we could cover, well, you name it, the LAPD consent decree, the mayoral race, hate crimes legislation, the Latino vote. Oh, and in case you hadn't heard, there's this election deal coming up next week. I'm sure we won't run out of cosa para chismear, that means stuff to yak about. Then shortly after its liberation, the African country of Namibia quickly gained a reputation as one of the continent's success stories, with a stable, growing economy and a wide range of civil rights granted to its citizens. But lately, a number of Namibian leaders' stances on the issues of civil rights for lesbians and gay men have been positively frightening. Jackie Carver of Radio MDS in the Netherlands has an interview with Namibian